comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful planet, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on earth, and it is the show where you matter. Tonight is K-Files night. I would have started sending it out earlier today, as I did last week. That was my intention. But there were some late entries into some things that came in the email that I wanted to include in this edition. So some late entries into this edition. But after the show tonight, we will begin sending it out. So if you are not subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, you need to be subscribed. And the way you do that is go to my website, KevinSmithShow.com, and you'll see a link that says K-Files, and if you click that, you can subscribe in a matter of seconds. All you have to do is put your email address in the little slot and click submit, and then you'll get a confirmation email, and you have to click a link in there, and that says that, yes, you really did intend to subscribe. But that's it. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And it's free, so there's really no reason not to do it. Well, I've been telling you now for several nights that tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. And we are. Tonight will be sort of, kind of, a mini seminar. And tonight, you're going to meet someone who has played a very, very major role in the professional investigation of UFOs. And yet, his name is not one that's familiar to very many people currently in the UFO community. And yet, the role he played is probably the single most important role that anyone has ever played in the field of UFO investigation. During World War II, he served in the U.S. Army Air Corps. He was awarded 5 battle stars, 2 theater combat ribbons, 3 air medals, and 2 distinguished flying crosses. While in the Pacific Theater, he was one of the first in the U.S. Armed Forces to be trained in the use of radar. You'll meet Captain Edward J. Ruppelt this evening, but you will not meet him in person. Captain Ruppelt died in 1960. Instead, you'll meet Captain Ruppelt through his work, his writings, his reputation, and through the mystery surrounding his death. Most people who know anything about Captain Ruppelt will now be scratching their heads and saying, "Mystery surrounding his death?" Yes, indeed. We'll be back right after this. Thank you. Edward J. Ruppelt was born in 1922 in Iowa and was raised in Iowa. And in World War II, during the war, he enlisted in the Army Air Corps and served with distinction. I've already read to you the medals and awards, citations, etc., that he received. After the war, Ruppelt was released into the Army Reserves. Now, in that period of time, after he had been released into the Army Reserves, he went back to college. He went to Iowa State College. And in 1951, he earned a degree in aeronautical engineering. Shortly after that, the Korean War had broken out. Of course, we never called it a war, but it was. And he was recalled to active military duties and was assigned to the Air Technical Intelligence Center. Now, do you have any idea where that is? Never mind what it is right now. Do you know where it was? Well, it was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Now, to anyone who has any familiarity at all with the subject of UFOs and with the history of UFO investigations, you know that Wright-Patterson Air Force Base comes up frequently in testimonies of people formerly in the military who talk about crashed UFOs being recovered and being sent to Wright-Patterson. Well, he was in the Air Technical Intelligence Center at Wright-Patterson. Now, this base, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, had also been the headquarters to two formal investigations by the Air Force into unidentified flying objects. And again, if you have any familiarity at all with the history around UFO investigation, then you'll be familiar with Project Sign. Project Sign was the investigation conducted by the U.S. Army Air Corps from 1947 until 1948. And Project Sign had come to the conclusion, or at least they favored the conclusion, that these UFOs were of extraterrestrial origin. Well, Project Sign was replaced by Project Grudge, 1949 to 1951. And Project Grudge apparently had a debunking mandate. They did everything they could to debunk the whole idea of UFOs. And Ruppelt was not originally involved with Grudge, but he learned that the project was facing some troubles when some high-ranking officers disapproved of the direction that Project Grudge had taken. So within the military, within the group of people involved in this investigation of UFOs, you had some high-ranking officers who did not take well to the debunking mandate of Project Grudge. However, Grudge was eventually ordered to be dissolved. And when it was dissolved, it was replaced. It was replaced by something I would suspect every single person listening to my voice around this earth right now is familiar with, and that is Project Blue Book. Now, Project Blue Book, in a lot of the UFO circles today, is assailed as basically a whitewash, and it was never intended to find out anything. However, you have heard me say that Project Blue Book actually is quite the opposite, because it is quite obvious that they tried to debunk each and every UFO report that came in, but they did it from the standpoint of, if we can actually debunk it, if we can actually identify what this is, then it's not a UFO. And that's fair, that's scientific, that's good investigation. But there is something else that this Project Blue Book did. And I'll talk more about this a little bit later, but one of the things that it did is, by computer analysis, came up with about 22% of the reports that simply were unknowns. They could not be debunked. And they tended to be the best reports with the most information, with the most data. And those reports could not be identified. So what Project Blue Book actually is, when you look at the whole program, and not just the part where they did debunk, if you look at the whole program, Project Blue Book ends up being an official U.S. government document officially stating there are UFOs. Because 22% of the cases investigated by the best air intelligence minds, scientists, physicists, astronomers, everybody they could pull in to work on Project Blue Book, about 22% of them left all of the experts scratching their heads and saying, there's no explanation for that. As a result of all that, Ruppelt coined a phrase that you use every day, and so do I. UFO. It was Ruppelt who first called them unidentified flying objects. It was Ruppelt who was the first chief of Project Blue Book. Because when Project Blue Book came into being in 1951, they looked around for someone to head it, and they selected Ruppelt. He was selected because he had a very level-headed approach to everything that he did. And even in the waning days of Project Grudge, he had instituted some changes in Grudge to make it more professional. And, you know, he just sort of wasn't really part of Grudge, but kind of had an influence on it. And it made a dramatic impact on the people up above. And so he was chosen to be the chief of the new Project Blue Book. Now, Project Blue Book, as I said, you know, it gets assailed by lots and lots and lots of people. It gets assailed by people who they think that it was a whitewash job, that it was just put up there to keep the public occupied and distracted. But in a way, it gets assailed, or at least it gets misused, by people who are sort of professional skeptics. And, you know, I hate to even use the word skeptic, because they give the word skeptic a bad name. They won't even examine the evidence. But they point to Blue Book and they say, well, you see, Project Blue Book investigated all this stuff and they determined that there was just nothing to it. That isn't the truth. That isn't the truth at all. What Project Blue Book did was establish that, in fact, there are genuine, real, unidentified flying objects that the best minds in the military, the best minds in science, could not identify. Well, it was Edward J. Ruppelt, Captain Ruppelt, that was the head or the chief of Project Blue Book. Project Blue Book was in business for a good while. It was in business for a good while after Ruppelt left the military. But his organizational skills made an impact that lasted all the way through the project. He implemented a number of changes in the way things were done. For instance, he streamlined the manner in which UFOs were reported by military officials and reported to military officials. And he streamlined it in such a way because he hoped that this would help to alleviate some of the stigma and some of the ridicule that were associated with reporting UFOs. Now, that was a very major contribution, wouldn't you say? If he were trying to whitewash all of the UFO information, why would he try to make life easier on people who reported UFOs? He needed military people to come forward and report what they were seeing. And he needed the information they had, the data they had. But if they were afraid of being labeled as a nut, or if they were afraid of being ridiculed, there's no way they were going to step forward with their information. So Ruppelt made some changes in the way you go about reporting a UFO, and it actually not just the way that it was reported, that was part of it, but to whom it got reported, what channels that information flowed through. Whenever he started putting Project Blue Book together, he had seen, because he was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, he had seen the factionalism that had boiled to the surface quite frequently in Project Grudge. The factionalism consisted of one group that wanted to debunk everything no matter what and say, look, there's nothing to this. It's all swamp gas. And then the other group that said, now, wait a minute. You can't go into this with your mind made up. You have to investigate it with an open mind and let the data lead where the data leads. So there was this factionalism inside of Project Grudge, and Ruppelt didn't want that in Project Blue Book. You know, normally, to put a project together like this, normally they would have selected a colonel or above. And it's a real compliment, if you will, a real testament to Ruppelt's efficiency and his skills and his fair-mindedness that caught the attention of the generals, and they put him in charge of Blue Book instead of several colonels that they had to choose from. So Ruppelt did his best to recruit for investigators for Project Blue Book. He really worked at recruiting people that were open-minded, objective, but neutral on this thing about whether UFOs were extraterrestrial or terrestrial or whatever they were. He wanted his people, number one, the number one priority, he wanted them to approach the subject of UFOs, the topic, with an open mind. He didn't want them to have their mind already made up. He didn't want them to have their position already cut out for them, as if cut out by a cookie cutter. And so he was very, very careful in the selection of the people that he put into Project Blue Book. And in addition, he didn't just want military people involved with Project Blue Book. He sought the assistance and the advice of many scientists, many experts in many different fields, and he did something that was not really customary prior to him, not customary for the military. He held regular press conferences, issued regular press releases regarding the work of Project Blue Book. Now, this is you might say, well, you know, okay, but he didn't give us everything. Well, you can bet he didn't. Some of it was classified. And he sent classified monthly reports to military intelligence. But he did sit down and write press releases to give us some of the information. Because he felt like that the American people ought to know as much as he was going to be allowed to say. There were limits on it, of course, but within the boundaries of what he was allowed to say, he wanted you to know what he was doing and what his group was finding. Some people might not like his press releases, but when's the last time you had a group in the government sit down and write press releases about UFOs and tell you about their investigations of them? Ruppelt was the first. And that practice was continued after he left Project Blue Book, but he was the one that established it. Of course, it ended when Project Blue Book ended. But probably one of the most important things that he instituted, that he developed, was this. He ordered the development of a standard questionnaire for UFO witnesses so that when a witness in Ohio saw a UFO, that witness would have the same questions. Now, there could be more, but the same basic questions were going to be asked. There could be more questions, but those would be asked in Ohio, in California, in Texas, in Michigan, wherever the UFO had been seen. We'll be back right after this. Talking about what Captain Edward J. Ruppelt did that was so important. You know, at the top of the show, I said that this guy played a role in professional UFO investigation that is perhaps the single most important role ever played by anybody in the field of UFO investigation. Now, that doesn't mean that there are not others who have played very important roles. There are others who have and who are playing very important roles in professional UFO investigation. And yet, we owe tons, I mean tons, of thanks to Captain Ruppelt for some of the things that he did that got the ball rolling toward professional investigation of UFOs. You know, he writes in his book, which, by the way, is now available as an e-book. It's out of print. The original printing, it's no longer in print. But we have it as an e-book. And there are some special printings. I saw on the internet that you can get a special printing of this in hardback for $98.99. But we have it as an e-book. You'll see it on the website. He says in his book that people talk about that there was a whitewash going on. And he said it really was not that. He said it was more like organized confusion. And when I read that, I knew exactly what he was talking about. Having worked in United Nations missions, I have seen organized confusion. everyone has a system. Everyone has, you know, there's an SOP, a standard operating procedure. There's a procedure for absolutely everything you're going to do, a requisition form for everything you're going to need, although you'll probably not get it. So there, everyone knows procedure, and it's organized, but it's like almost nobody knows what to do. It's all organized, but confused. Well, he said that's the way it was, at least in the beginning, with Project Blue Book. And I can well understand that. I well understand what he's talking about. So he began to get things organized and then moving forward. And one of the great things he did is he ordered the development of a standardized questionnaire. Why? Well, it's because he commissioned the Battelle Memorial Institute to create this questionnaire in such a way that they would be able then to take the answers and computerize the data for analysis. So here we have the first real step forward in trying to get a handle on what's going on with these UFOs. It's obvious that whoever is driving them, whoever's flying them, is not going to pull over to the side of the road and let you interview them. So there had to be some way to gather the data and then to analyze it. And so he commissioned a professional group to create this standardized questionnaire that would be used in all the investigations so that these reports, the answers to these questions, could be entered into computers, which, by the way, were very primitive back then. You know, back at that time, there was no such thing as a PC or a Mac. There was no such thing as a desktop computer. There were these huge monsters that filled rooms and had very little computing power compared to what we have today. And the data, they used punch cards. Some of you are old enough to remember those IBM punch cards. It's a little piece of card, and it had holes punched in it, and that was how you entered the data, was punching holes in this card. There were machines that did that. But that was the most modern equipment, computer equipment available at the time, and he put it to work on investigating, seriously investigating UFOs. Now, I hope you're beginning to get a picture of this guy. I hope you're beginning to sort of understand a little bit about him. He took UFO investigation seriously. Now, he stayed with Project Blue Book up until 1953, and he left the military. He was not head of Project Blue Book any longer when the Battelle Memorial Institute finally was able to crunch the numbers and come out with a report. Now, this report is one of the most important parts of Project Blue Book. It is called Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14. It came out a year after he had left the military. It came out in 1954. And it's this report that I mentioned earlier, because those scientists at the Battelle Memorial Institute found that even after very stringent analysis, you have to understand that, first of all, UFO reports that had very little corroborating evidence, there was nothing to go on much, people saw lights in the sky, that sort of thing, that didn't go into Project Blue Book. They didn't even put those in. So there were very, very stringent standards, and even after all of this stringent standards and analysis, 22% of the cases remained classified as unknown. 22% unknown. further, these were different from the knowns at a very high level of statistical significance. And the difference was that these were the ones for which there was the most testimony, the highest quality testimony, the most data. These are the ones, for instance, for an example, a UFO sighting by a seasoned fighter pilot who sees it on radar. They see it on ground radar. He's sent up to take a look at it. He's got it on his radar. Then he gets close enough that he has a visual. He gets close enough that he can describe features of it. And then he describes its flight characteristics that are absolutely unknown to anything that we fly. Like making a right angle turn at 2,000 miles an hour. That's the kind of reports that you have in that 22%. So they ran a statistical study comparing the best cases that were unknowns to the knowns. In other words, a known is one that they could identify. And what they found out is that the best cases were twice as likely to be classified as unknowns. So if you had a really good testimony, if you had a really good witness with high quality training, and you get a really detailed, data-filled description of what happened, it's twice as likely that that's going to end up being unknown. We don't know what that was. Well, it was Ruppelt that caused that report to be generated, though it did not get generated until a year after he left. It was Ruppelt that instigated, that gave the orders to have the standardized questionnaire developed, to have it put into computers, to have the data analyzed, and to have that report written. That was Ruppelt. So there you have, as a result of Captain Edward J. Ruppelt, an official document paid for by the federal government, done as work inside the U.S. Air Force, an official document that definitely states unidentified flying objects are real. 22% of the cases, after we've done everything we can possibly do to debunk them, 22% of these cases are UFOs. So you have a document, that an official document from the U.S. government that states they are real. But then let's go back. Let's step back in time just a little bit. Let's put Ruppelt back in charge of Project Blue Book. He's been in charge of Project Blue Book for only a year when something really amazing happens. A fleet of UFOs flies over the U.S. Capitol in July 1952. And then, 1 week later, just 1 week later, they did it again. Now, when they did this, you have to know this caused a great deal of consternation. It caused a great deal of consternation across the country, in the U.S. military in general, and the U.S. Air Force in particular. The president, Harry S. Truman, was concerned about it. And how do we know? Well, we have Harry S. Truman on, it was on film, now it's on video, where he's answering questions for the press. They ask him, has he discussed UFOs, I think they use the term flying saucers. Have you discussed those, Mr. President, with the military? And his answer was, oh, yeah, I talk with the military about flying saucers all the time. You know, we have those kinds of things happening all the time. And this generated one of the biggest press conferences the U.S. military has ever held. Now, at this press conference, you had it loaded with brass. There's a famous picture of the guys involved in the press conference, the military guys. I don't know the identities of everyone in that picture, but I have been able to identify three of them. There is General Ramey, General Samford, and then standing behind them, looking down over their shoulders, Captain Edward J. Ruppelt, who was, at the moment the photograph was taken, he was the head, the chief, of Project Blue Book. So when that very famous incident took place where the UFOs flew over the U.S. Capitol, flew over Washington, D.C., Ruppelt was 1 year into heading Project Blue Book. We'll be back right after this. You know, up till now, you've been getting to know Captain Edward J. Ruppelt. I said something at the beginning of the show that I know you've been sitting on the edge of your seat wanting to hear about the mystery surrounding his death. And believe me, we're going to get to that. There's a little bit more you need to know in order to really understand what this is all about. A moment ago, for those who are watching on our TV channel, I showed a photograph of some military brass. General Ramey, General Samford, that's S-A-M-F-O-R-D, Captain Ruppelt, and there are three other people. Two you can see. I don't know who they are. One you can see his nose sticking into the picture from the right side. General Ramey is the one who started the UFO cover-up in earnest. There probably had been a little bit of UFO cover-up going on, but nothing really strong until General Ramey. After the top air intelligence officer on the planet. Think about that. The top air intelligence officer on planet Earth was Major Jesse Marcel. He was the air intelligence officer for the 509th Wing. It was the only nuclear-armed bomber wing on planet Earth, and he was the air intelligence officer. And after Jesse Marcel had been sent out to a site a few miles outside of Roswell, New Mexico, to take a look at something that a rancher had noticed in his field, and after Jesse Marcel had picked up some of the debris, brought it back home, showed his wife and son and said, "This is not from this world." And then took that debris back to the base. After all of that, and the press release had gone out saying that The U.S. Army had recovered a crashed flying disc. General Ramey steps into the picture. General Ramey has a press conference. And in this press conference, he shows the reporter debris from a downed or crashed, if you will, weather balloon. He makes Jesse Marcel get down and pick up some of that debris and hold it up and look up at the camera. And he's got a look on his face. If you go back and look at those pictures, you'll see Jesse Marcel's, the look on his face is, "You guys are not buying this, are you? I can't believe you guys are buying this." That's what the look on his face looks like. And they snap those famous pictures, and Ramey is in those pictures holding a note which has now, because of improved abilities of computers and optics, now much of that telegram has been read. You're able to read it now. You couldn't in those original photographs, but that can be enhanced now and pulled out of there. And it talks about a crashed flying disc and the occupants, and that they have been forwarded on to Fort Worth and so forth. It says the victims were forwarded on to Fort Worth. Exactly what other people have told us about. Well, that's General Ramey in 1952 in this meeting of the brass, where Captain Ruppelt is looking over the shoulders of General Ramey and General Samford. That's the guy that instituted the heavy-handed cover-up of UFO information that has grown and grown and grown into the monstrosity that it is today. But there is Captain Ruppelt, who is heading Project Blue Book, and its purpose is to get the information to find out what these things are. Ruppelt sort of, if you read his book, which you can get on our website, if you read it, what you find out is that he seems to have some sympathy for General Ramey, General Samford, in that these guys truly are stymied. They don't know what is going on. They don't know. They know that the phenomena is there. They know that the phenomena is real. They have no idea, though, where these UFOs are coming from. They don't know who's flying them and what's their purpose. Are they earthly? Are they not earthly? And there's Ruppelt. That's his job, to try and find out. Along the way, he commissioned the services of an astronomer by the name of Dr. J. Allen Hynek. Hynek wrote that Ruppelt did his best, only to see his efforts stymied. Hynek wrote, "In my contacts with Ruppelt, I found him to be honest and seriously puzzled about the whole phenomenon." It's pretty interesting. The longer Hynek was affiliated with Project Blue Book, the more convinced he became that unidentified flying objects are real. Now, he in the early days, he was debunking them right and left. But he became convinced that he was on the wrong side of the fence here. And Dr. Hynek became one of the major proponents for scientific study of unidentified flying objects. And Ruppelt, after he left the military and left Project Blue Book, continued to be involved with the whole thing about UFOs. Now, he left in 1953. All right. After he left, He stayed involved. I'm talking about Ruppelt. He stayed involved in the study and investigation of UFOs, as I can document. Because there's a photograph that exists. This photograph was taken at George Van Tassel's Interplanetary Space Convention in 1955. All right. What does that mean? That means it's 2 years after Ruppelt left Project Blue Book, 2 years after he left the military. And in this particular photograph, it's kind of interesting. Back in those days, there was a woman by the name of Dana Howard who had written a book and was selling this book at these conventions called My Flight to Venus. She claimed to be a contactee, someone who had been in contact with the occupants of UFOs, and that they were from Venus, and she had been taken to Venus. She wrote a book about this. Now, regardless of whether you think that you know she was telling something that was true, or maybe she was a hoax, that's beside the point. The point is, she's a fact of UFO life. She's a fact of UFO history. And in this photograph, it shows her, and I don't know if that's her husband or just a friend, seated at a table. It's outdoors. It's taken outdoors. It looks like a desert location. And there are cars parked all around. So apparently they had this convention outdoors. She has a table set up. She's selling books. And there's something quite amazing in the photograph, which I will tell you about as soon as we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We were taking a little tour through a photograph that I have. Now, this photograph was taken in 1955. As I was describing it, there is this lady by the name of Dana Howard. And she claimed to have been a contactee and that she had been taken on board one of the UFOs, one of the ships, to Venus, and she wrote a book called My Flight to Venus. Now, this photograph was taken at George Van Tassel's Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention in 1955. I'm not sure, but I believe that was in Nevada. I could be wrong about that. It's not, for the purposes of what we're talking about here, it's not that important. But in this picture, she's seated at a table. It's outside. This table is right up next to some parked cars, and I mean, looks like it. Maybe there's room to walk between the car and the table. And you can see that there are three cars that we can see fairly clearly in this photograph, and leaned against the car that's just behind Dana Howard is Captain Edward J. Ruppelt. So here we are 2 years after he has left the military, 2 years after he has finished working with Project Blue Book, and he's at this convention. Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention in 1955. Well, that's 2 years after his retirement. It's 1 year before he writes his book. Now, folks, this is where the mystery starts. It's this photograph that caused me to take another look at this. It's this photograph that made me do a double take and say, wait a minute. 2 plus 2 is 4, 2 plus 2 is not 5, and the story that we have been given about Ruppelt is 5. The story that has come down to us about his book and his death, they want us to believe it's a 5, but 2 plus 2 is never 5. It's always 4. It's this photograph that caused me to say there's something that isn't right here. In this photograph, Ruppelt is present at George Van Tassel's Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention in 1955, and that happens to be 5 years before his death. And he's standing looking at Dana Howard, who's selling her book about her contact with extraterrestrials and about her flight to Venus. Now, this plays a critical role in the mystery. So what is the mystery? Well, let's go to 1956, 1 year after this picture was taken. In 1956, Ruppelt published his book. Now, his book was entitled, and it's the one that it is the book that's on our website as an ebook. And he published this book. It is called The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects. And it was notable because, and in fact, it was notable for several decades. Because it's the only account of Air Force UFO studies written by someone who was involved. And not only was he involved, he was the chief of it. So we get a lot of insider information in this book. And it's pretty amazing. Man, if you think Ruppelt was involved in whitewashing, read this book. Ruppelt was honest in saying, I don't know where they're from. I don't know. But he was also honest in saying, they do exist. When you read his book, you will come away from it saying, this guy didn't whitewash anything. That is, if you read the book that's on our website. Doesn't that sound cryptic? Well, it is, because in 1960, two big events happened. 1956, Ruppelt publishes this book, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects. 1956, 4 years later, 1960. In 1960, we began to have an uptick in UFO encounters and sightings again. In 1960, two significant events happened relative to this story. Number one, all of a sudden, the publisher comes out with this book again, except it's not this book. The publisher comes out with this book plus 3 additional chapters and does not say this is a revision, doesn't publicize this is a revision, never before seen material, 3 additional chapters by Captain Ruppelt, none of that. They kept that silent. They never publicized that. If you didn't have a copy of the original book that Ruppelt published, to compare it with the one that they came out with in 1960, you would never know. And why is that important? Because in those 3 additional chapters, ostensibly written by Ruppelt, he poo-poos everything else that he's already written, that he's already published. He basically comes down to saying that it's all just space age mythology. He comes away from it looking like someone who has decided he does not think UFOs are real. So that's one thing that happened. One thing. The publisher comes out with this revised version of the book without telling anyone. There's no notations in the book. There's no publicity. There's nothing that says this is revised. And that is absolutely not how these things are done. Everything is exactly the same. They simply add three chapters in which Ruppelt walks away from the UFO phenomena and sort of shaking his head and saying it's bunk. That's the 1960 version. Well, lucky for you, I have the 1956 version on the website. You can get it. It's $9. You can see what Ruppelt unquestionably wrote. But those remaining three chapters that were added in 1960, I'm not so sure he did write them. Someone did, but I'm not real sure he did. And if he did, I can almost prove, and by almost, I can prove to my satisfaction, but I can almost prove conclusively that if he did write those, he wrote them under duress. And how can I do that? Well, let's talk about what's the next thing that happened. There were two things. First, this surprising, absolutely unorthodox, absolutely non-traditional way of issuing a revision book. This book in 1960 comes out as a revision without telling anybody that it's a revision. And this version repudiates everything in all the other chapters. And then, at the age of 38 years old, Captain Ruppelt dies of a heart attack in 1960. Now, I cannot say, nor can I insinuate, that someone decided to take Ruppelt out and to discredit his work. Can't prove that. I can tell you, however, that if I'm standing in the front room of a great mansion, and somewhere deep in the bowels of this mansion is a kitchen, and in the kitchen the cook is cooking cabbage, I can tell you there's cabbage cooking without ever even knowing where the kitchen is. This doesn't add up. It is possible that Captain Ruppelt died of a natural heart attack. It is also possible he did not. And the only thing that makes it really, really smell like cabbage is those three additional chapters published in a revision book without ever acknowledging that it's a revision. The publisher never acknowledged that it was a revision. Well, they may have later. But they didn't publicize it as a revision. It didn't say the report on unidentified flying objects revision or revised. They didn't say anything about it. They just let the public, unsuspecting, think they were buying the original book that had just been republished. But it wasn't the original book. It had three chapters in which the guy who was our version here in the United States of America, our version of Nick Pope. Three chapters in which it pictures him as walking away from the UFO phenomena, throwing his hands up and saying it's all bunk. It's all mythology. Three chapters that I don't think he wrote. But maybe he did. If he did, he wrote them under duress. How can I say that? Well, it is because when that book came out, there were people like Major Donald Kehoe who knew Ruppelt. Tried to get Ruppelt to work with him, and Ruppelt felt that Major Kehoe was pretty much on track. However, he didn't like Major Kehoe's tactics. He felt that he was going toward a little bit too much sensationalism instead of sticking just with the science of investigation, which Ruppelt preferred. But Major Kehoe said, look, Ruppelt, his credentials are intact. I don't understand those three chapters, why he wrote them, but Ruppelt's credentials are intact. He's honest, and he's a guy that really, really pushed the envelope on UFO investigation. And so he maintained high respect for him. But here's what's interesting. Ruppelt's widow apparently asserted that her husband's investigation, the reason for those three chapters, according to her, is that her husband's investigation of the contactee movement soured his opinion of UFO phenomena. Really? Well, let me take you back. Let me take you back to George Van Tassel's Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention. Ruppelt's widow was not a widow until 1960. Those three chapters were not written and published until 1960, 5 years after George Van Tassel's Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention. And in the photograph that I discussed, we see Captain Edward J. Ruppelt present at that convention, mixing with contactees. We have the main subject of the picture is a contactee, Dana Howard. In 1955, 1 year before he wrote his original book, he's already up to his elbows in the contactee movement. He knew who they were. He's present at their conventions. He's well aware of what they're claiming, what they're saying. He knows all of that stuff before he writes the original book, a year, at least a year before. Now, he probably knew these people from even longer before. But this photograph is from a year before he wrote his book. Meaning, if he was, as the widow says, if his investigation of the contactee movement soured his opinion of UFO phenomena, well, his contact with the contactees was before he wrote his first original book. Do you get the point? That means if it was going to sour his opinion of the UFO phenomena, it should have done so before he wrote his first book. Well, he only wrote one book. But before he wrote the book, and it was released for the first time in 1956, all of that investigation with the contactees was already a fact of history for him. That picture nails down that the explanation of those three chapters being a result of him going sour on the UFO phenomena as a result of investigating contactee stories. That picture's the evidence that that statement can't be true, because that statement is made 4 years after, I'm sorry, 5 years after we see him in that photograph rubbing elbows with the contactees. It's made, that statement is made 4 years after he writes his book, and there's not a word in his book, as you'll see if you get it, and you should, it's only $9. There's not a word in there of contactee information souring him on the UFO phenomena. And you know there's a reason why. The reason I spent so much time telling you about Captain Ruppelt was so that you would understand this statement. I think you can see from what I've told you about Captain Ruppelt, this is a guy that was level-headed and could fully understand, without anybody having to point it out to him, that UFO phenomena is one set of data. That's UFO phenomena. Contactees saying they met an alien and that they went onto a ship, that's something else. The stories may be related, but there aren't any photographs of people getting onto these ships and taking their rides, as far as I know. There are photographs of UFOs in flight. Two separate issues. And he was focused on the investigation of UFOs. He was focused on professional scientific investigation of these UFOs. So a contactee comes up and says, you know, I took a flight on a UFO to a planet called Mugbug. I think Ruppelt would have said, okay. He would have listened to the story, and that story would be what it is, just a story. Do you have any evidence? Were there any people with you that can corroborate your story? Do you have any photographs? No, they didn't have any of that. So he had an interest in the contactee movement, but the contactee movement is not the UFO phenomenon. He could clearly understand that. And we see in that photograph that he was rubbing shoulders with the contactee movement before he wrote that first edition. So if they were going to sour him on UFO phenomenon, I think it makes sense that it would have done it before he wrote his first book. Or before he wrote the book. So who wrote the three chapters? Well, maybe he did. Maybe he did. Maybe under duress. Maybe he didn't. Maybe those three chapters were delivered to the publisher, and I don't know. I haven't interviewed his family, so I don't know the answer to this. But maybe those three chapters were delivered to the publisher. The publisher was, shall we say, encouraged to come out with the book again and not call it a revision. Maybe they then informed Ruppelt, your book is coming out. We've added a few things to it. Maybe Ruppelt was unhappy. Maybe that triggered his heart attack. Or maybe that triggered them to make sure he had a heart attack. I don't know which way that goes, and those are possibilities, not insinuations or accusations. Those are just possibilities. But I do know that it is high strangeness for the publisher to have come out with that book in 1960 with a major revision, three chapters that come to a completely different conclusion than the original book. To come out with that and never tell anybody that that's a revision, just release it to the public as if it's the real thing. High strangeness. High strangeness that at 38 years of age, Captain Ruppelt, in the same year that's done, suddenly falls dead of a heart attack. High strangeness. Now, I'll tell you this. The reason that I got onto this is because when something's missing in the evidence, when there's something that goes silent, when there's something that someone won't talk about, it draws my attention to it. And someone needs to come up with a rational answer for why Ruppelt would have put... Look, here are some coincidences that have to line up. He put three chapters, let's say he did it, three chapters on the end of the book. in 1960, three chapters that repudiate virtually everything he has said in the rest of the book. Why? Well, there's the story of that the widow of Ruppelt told, but that doesn't hold water. There's photographic evidence that that's not true. The second great coincidence is that the publisher comes out with the book without publicizing that it's a revision. That would have been a huge selling point. Oh boy, additional information from the guy that ran Project Blue Book. No, not a word. Not a whisper. Not a peep in the wind. They just put it out as if it's the original book. Great coincidence, don't you think? And Ruppelt dies at age 38 of a heart attack in the very same year. Three great coincidences, and maybe they are. Maybe it's all just coincidental. Not likely. I'm going to open the phone lines when we come back. Maybe you've got some thoughts about this. Somebody railroaded our version of Nick Pope. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As we went to break, I said I'm going to open the telephone lines, and I am. I am venturing a guess that this is a story that you perhaps have not heard. I've been doing UFO stories. I won't call it investigation, research, for a long, long time. I was reading everything I could get my hands on about UFOs long before I ever did the first edition of the Kevin Smith Show back in 2000. And I have never heard this story. I had heard of Captain Ruppelt, but I had not heard all this string of information as I've presented it to you here tonight. I hope you understand the importance of the fact that that book came out in 1960 with three additional chapters that repudiate everything he wrote in all the other chapters that he published in 1956. I hope you understand the importance of the fact that after his death, the explanation for that given by his widow was that investigating the contactee movement had soured him on the whole UFO phenomenon. I hope you understand the importance of the fact that can't be the case, because we have a picture of him rubbing elbows with the contactees a year before he published the original book. So if And he had been part of Project, he'd been a part of it. He was the chief of Project Blue Book. Now, as chief of Project Blue Book, he certainly was involved with contactees. His people were involved. He was getting reports from contactees. So to say that investigating the contactees had soured him on the UFO phenomenon, when we know in fact that he was well aware of all of that before he wrote the book originally, just doesn't hold water. Captain Ruppelt, as I said, was our version of a Nick Pope. Let me go ahead and give the telephone numbers. You have to pardon me. I get rolling on something and I forget to do things that I'm supposed to do. So let me give you the telephone numbers. The main telephone number is 623-444-5889. Now, that will work from anywhere on planet Earth. All right. 623-444-5889. The toll-free number in the USA and in Canada is 888-223-4599. I don't have an international toll-free number. So if you are not in the USA or Canada, and believe me, I've tried to get an international toll-free number. To the best of my knowledge, they don't actually exist. You know, where you could just call toll-free from anywhere in the world. To the best of my knowledge, those don't exist. So if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call us on the main number, 623-444-5889. Or if you don't want to make that international long-distance call, you can send me a flash message, and you do that by going to my website, scroll down, and you can see a link that says flash message. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is James from Texas.
Hello, James.
I just wanted to give you an attaboy. Excellent synapses, really good deductive reasoning. I agree with you. You're probably 90% correct.
What's the other 10%?
Well, I don't want to call his wife a liar.
I'm not saying that.
No, you're not.
I'm saying that may be her opinion, but it won't hold water. She may have not even known that he was at that convention.
My feeling about Mr. Repelt is that he couldn't leave it alone. Mm-hmm. It's like with Dr. Bergman, and like the officer at Kolaris. They get in so far, and investigating it becomes a corner to go around. They cannot drop it. I can well understand it, and it's what an honest man comes to over something as revelatory as this.
I agree. Do you find it odd that they would publish his book in 1960 but add three chapters and never tell anybody?
Well, no one is a bigger prostitute than a book publisher.
Okay.
They've done this sort of thing to writers.
Are you still with us, James? We've lost your audio. Interesting. James, I wish we could hear you, but we can't hear you. So, but thank you for the call. Look, I'm going to tell you something. I personally know publishers. I have talked with publishers about this story who have told me that this is absolutely not the way you do it. It's absolutely out of step with the way things are done. If you're going to come out with a revised edition of something, that's big news. It means that it's got all the original information and more. And that makes it a bigger marketing tool. So you always publicize that it's a revision. And they didn't. They didn't. If you didn't have a copy of the original from 1956, which you can get, if you didn't have it to compare with the one they came out with in 1960, nobody was going to tell you that the one in 60 was adulterated. That nobody was going. It was not really a revision. It was a revision, but it wasn't like additional information. It was dissing information. And that's absolutely not the way it's done in the world of publishing. And this was a major publishing house. So what could have But put yourself in the shoes of the publisher. Put yourself in those shoes. You're about to spend a lot of money to come out with a book that you already published 4 years ago. Now, here it is with some additional chapters, and you're trying to grab a new audience for this book. Why? Well, everybody that's going to buy the book in its original form has pretty much done so. It's been 4 years, so everybody that's going to has pretty much bought it. So now you're coming out with a revised version. Your aim, after spending these thousands of dollars, and believe me, it takes thousands, sometimes more than thousands. So here you are about to spend these thousands of dollars to come out with this book again, in the hopes of grabbing a new audience and getting them to buy the book. Okay, but wouldn't it make sense if it's a revision with additional information, you publicize it, you market it that way, so that even people who bought the original book may go buy the revised version? Now you've got the old audience and a new audience. That's the way it's done. It's done that way every day in the publishing business, but not in the case of Captain Ruppelt's book. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Hi, Ryan.
You know, Colonel Friend is still around. Colonel Friend, he still does interviews from what I understand. I just thought...
Tell the audience who Colonel Friend is.
Colonel Friend was involved with Project Blue Book. He was one of the lead persons involved. I know that if you get a hold of Angela Joyner, I think he's still around. He did a... You might be able to get him on your show eventually, but I just...
Do you think he would have any information? Ryan, do you think he would have any information about Captain Ruppelt?
Well, I don't know.
Because I've got the information on Project Blue Book.
Yeah.
You know, but this mystery, I mean, to me, this is a huge mystery. It looks to me like somebody severely railroaded the guy who's our version of Nick Pope.
Yeah, it seems like they're pretty good at doing that over the years, railroading people.
Mm-hmm.
They're good at ruining people's careers. So anyways, we're almost not very much time, so I'll hang up. I just wanted to bring that up. That
all right.
There are still people still around that were involved in Blue Book. So.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thank you for the call. But the mystery, and unless these people can tell us the truth about what happened with Ruppelt's book, unless they have insight on that, we know Project Blue Book. We know what that is. And we can go get a copy of it and read it. But the mystery is not Project Blue Book. The mystery is the guy who was the first head of it, the guy that put it together, who formed Project Blue Book. That guy is the one that pushed scientific investigation of UFOs onto the forefront, onto the stage. He's the one that made that happen. He's the one that caused... Look, this is important, folks. Ruppelt is the one who caused to be generated the only document that I am aware of, the only official document of the U.S. government that officially states unidentified flying objects are real. They exist and they are here. As far as I know, there is no other official document of the U.S. government that states that. And it was Ruppelt that made that happen. How did he do it? Well, he commissioned the Battelle Memorial Institute to come up with a standardized questionnaire to use with all UFO witnesses that Project Blue Book interviewed. And then the Battelle Memorial Institute took those standardized answers, the answers to the standardized questions, put them into a computerized form so that they could do analysis on them, and then they came out with Special Report 14. And that's the one. That's the official document, Project Blue Book Special Report 14. That's the one that says 22% after rigorous analysis, stringent standards, 22% can't be explained. They are unknowns. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Look, I want to clear up something. I was just in such a, had so much material, and I didn't get to all the material, but I had so much material to try and present to you that I sort of ran over this really fast, and James, our caller from Texas, pointed it out. And I, what I'm about to say is not because I want to be politically correct here, it's because I want to be accurate. In no way am I saying that the widow of Ruppelt lied. Look, everybody you know a slice of them. You, I don't care if you're married to them, you know a slice. You don't know everything. And it's quite possible that maybe she heard him say things about various contactees that he thought they were nutty or something like that. And he may have even said, you know, I don't know why I even fool with this stuff. It's being taken over by kooks. And I'm not saying contactees are kooks. I'm just saying maybe she heard something like that. But that doesn't hold water as an explanation for those three chapters. And it doesn't hold water because we have Ruppelt. We have a photograph of Ruppelt rubbing elbows with contactees at George Van Tassel's Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention in 1955, a year before he wrote his book. If he was disgusted with them, he had been rubbing elbows with them and up to his eyes in reports from contactees as head of Project Blue Book. If he was disgusted with them and wanted to say something about it, that would have come out in his first book. It played no role in the book. He focused on UFOs. And who among us has not said about some contactee stories, that's just way too bizarre. I just can't buy that. And they may be true. There's always that possibility. But some of the contactee stories that we've heard, every one of us at some point has said, that's just too bizarre. I just can't buy that. So she probably did hear him say some of that. She probably did. All I'm saying is that doesn't hold water as an explanation for those three chapters. The great coincidences, think of it. Here you have the guy that General Ramey and General Samford and the President of the United States turned to in 1952 to get answers for what was happening with these UFOs over Washington, D.C. This is the guy they turned to, General Ramey, who had been in charge of the cover-up of Roswell. General Samford, President Harry Truman, turned to Captain Edward J. Ruppelt and his Project Blue Book to get answers for what is that? What are these things? Where do they come from? Because they had just flown over Washington, D.C. on two successive weekends in July 1952. And they turned to Ruppelt. This guy, if there ever was someone in the know, is the guy that's in the know. And then suddenly, in 1960, three chapters, additional chapters, show up for his book, get published with his book, ostensibly written by him. And these three chapters repudiate, or at least they scoff, the whole UFO phenomena as being basically space age mythology. How did that happen? And why did he die the same year? Maybe it was natural causes. Maybe the heart attack was... Maybe he suffered from for a long time from a bad heart. I don't know. It just really, really looks very, very odd. But the most telling two things are these. The publisher issued that revision and never said so, when that would have been a huge marketing tool. Believe me, publishers want money. And to keep it quiet, that there are three additional chapters in this version, to just keep that quiet, never say anything about it, makes no business sense. Therefore, it makes no sense. It doesn't fit. That's the first thing that doesn't fit. And the second thing is the explanation that he had become disenchanted with the whole UFO phenomena because of his investigation of contactees, when we can prove that his investigation of contactees goes at least all the way back to a year before he wrote the original book. And he never said a word about that in his original book. Like I said, you can be in a great mansion, and somewhere deep in the bowels of that mansion is a kitchen and a cook cooking cabbage. You don't even have to know where the kitchen is. If you're in the house, you know the cabbage is cooking. You can smell it. Something doesn't fit. The dates and the events don't match. They don't match reality. 2 + 2 = 4, but in this case, we're being asked to believe it's 5. I think Ruppelt, if he wrote those three chapters, did so under duress. And there is every possibility that he didn't even write them. Could have been written for him. Well, you can get his original book. Oh, it's not the original printing. It's in ebook format. But you can get it. We've got it on the website. You'll see it there. In fact, if you just click Major Ruppelt's picture on my website, that'll take you to the page where you can get it. It's $9 for the ebook. You really owe it to yourself to read this. If there's ever been an insider on UFO investigations, it's Ruppelt. And he shares a lot of inside information. You know, we know about the Robertson Commission, the Robertson Report. We know about that because it was in his book that he dropped the dime on Robertson Commission. That was Ruppelt. We didn't even know about it before then. The way we know about it is because he told us about it in his book. If there's ever, ever, ever been an insider on UFO investigation, it is the guy who headed the original chief, the original head of Project Blue Book. And he tells you some amazing inside information. So be sure you grab that. Now, right now it's $9. That's 10% less than it's going to be. So you got a 10% discount. when we marry that book with the video, then it's going to be $10. But you can save a buck by getting it before we do that. And we're going to do that this weekend, so you need to hurry and grab it while it's $9. Okay? Let me also say, if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files, you need to do that. You've got time. We're going to start sending it out in about an hour. And so, you know, if you have not yet subscribed, you have time. Well, I hope you've enjoyed it. I know for sure that I've presented information that the vast majority of you have not heard of before, and it's really worth your taking the time to check into it. There's a story there, my friends, and a big one. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to. Just keep coming back time after time after time. Until next time, so long, everybody.